We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Sex Out Loud is brought to you by the Smitten Kitten, non-toxic quality sex toys and supplies. Visit smittenkittenonline.com.
Smart, sexy, kinky, fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud. My guest today is author, performer, playwright, and gender theorist, Kate Bornstein, and she'll join me in a few minutes. Her book, Gender Outlaw, is to me one of the most important books written in the 20th century, and it has literally changed the way that we think about gender. So I was so excited to find out that she wrote a memoir. It just came out from Beacon Press, and it's called A Queer and Pleasant Danger. It has a long but very descriptive subtitle, which is The True Story of a Nice Jewish Boy Who Joins the Church of Scientology and Leaves 12 Years Later to Become the Lovely Lady She Is Today. I love this book. It's just remarkable in a number of ways. I mean, let's first talk about the fact that she writes about Scientology. And not only writes about it, but she was in the Church of Scientology for 12 years, and she became quite a high-ranking member, working under L. Ron Hubbard himself. And the thing that really struck me in just reading about Scientology, it has, you know, a lot of detractors, and it's, you know, they're really paranoid and intense and protective. And so reading it, all I could think was, this is really scary. And, oh my God, are they going to assassinate Kate Bornstein for saying this, for telling these secrets, for giving this insider view of Scientology? It actually, there's a little terror in there as you read into it. The book also covers her childhood, her time at Brown University, her transition when she worked at, of all places, IBM. That was fascinating. It talks about her time in Seattle when she was once a collared slave. And for me, it was so brave and honest in so many areas, but especially around Kate's struggles with mental health issues and mental illness. That really personally struck a chord for me. It's something that people don't talk enough about, and it's some of the most powerful stuff in the book, I think. You know, in part, this book reads like a good suspense novel. I mean, I couldn't wait to turn the page and see what happened next, which is the sign of a pretty exciting life, I would say. She just seems fearless in what she shares with her readers, what she's willing to kind of lay bare to all of us. There's also a great deal of heartbreak in this book, because the book is dedicated to her daughter and grandchildren who are still in the Church of Scientology and who we assume may never or will never read it. So there's just so much in there. I mean, there's this sadness and longing about these members of her family she's not in contact with at all. And yet it's mixed in with this sort of sexy, crazy, wild gender adventures, which is just, so it just evokes so many emotions. It's kind of pulling you in a lot of different directions at once, which I really enjoy. And I think is the mark of really good writing. And so I am just really, really pleased to welcome the author of such a bold and unflinching memoir to my show. Let me tell you a little bit about her first. Kate Bornstein is an author, playwright, and performance artist whose latest book is her memoir, A Queer and Pleasant Danger. Her other books include Gender Outlaw, On Men, Women, and the Rest of Us, My Gender Workbook, Hello, Cruel World, 101 Alternatives to Suicide for Teens, Freaks, and Other Outlaws, and the cyber romance action novel Nearly Roadkill with co-author Caitlin Sullivan. Kate's plays and performance pieces include Strangers in Paradox, Hidden, A Gender, The Opposite Sex is Neither, Virtually Yours, and Y2Kate, Gender Virus 2000. Kate's books are taught in over 120 colleges and universities around the world, and she's performed her work live on college campuses and in theaters and performance spaces across the United States, as well as in Canada, the UK, Germany, and Austria. Kate is currently touring colleges, youth conferences, high school events, speaking, leading workshops, and performing. In fact, she is headed to Los Angeles very shortly because she will be headlining Trans Unity Pride Week at the Los Angeles LGBT Center on June 16th and 17th, and will also be giving readings in bookstores in town. And she's headlining that with a great event with Mara Keisling of the National Center for Transgender Equality. So all of you LA area listeners out there, that's tomorrow. So get out there and go see Kate. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Kate.
Thank you, Miss Tristan. And may I say congratulations on your program. I think the world is better for you being a louder voice in it.
Thank you. That is sweet. So I want to get right into this memoir, which I unabashedly praised just a moment ago. I guess my first question is, why now? Why is now the time to do it? And how was the process of writing it like?
Haha. All right. First off, thank you for your awesome praise coming from you, who I admire as a writer. It means a great deal. And I've been getting similar reaction from readers, and it's only been out, you know, a little over a month now. Why now? I'm old, Tristan. I'm 64 years old. And this is what you do before you die. You reach out to your children and you say, here, this is what I've got to give you, dear. And yes, it's for my daughter and my grandchildren primarily. But over the course of the last 20 years, I have been privileged to claim extended family in the queer world. And they're my kids. Like, you know, like Jerry Lewis has kids, right? I have kids. And so I wanted to leave this for my kids. You, I would call my little sister.
Thank you.
All right.
And did you find it difficult? I mean, was there any point at which you said, oh, no, I can't write about that? Because it seems like you shut off the self-censor button and just went there on every level.
I think that the possibility that there's always more is in every page, and for sure there's more, but I wanted to tell as much of the truth as I possibly could. It's from my daughter. I haven't seen her in 30 years. Last time I saw her, she was 9. Yes, it was really, really hard. The good stuff the good thing, from a writer point of view, that I didn't think was going to happen was that once I finally came to accept the fact that I'm writing in the first person about terrible events in an identity I want nothing to be connected with, once I accepted that I was writing from that point of view, well, I was. It was like stepping into a role as an actor, only the role was my own past. And I could say the lines.
Wow. Wow, that's a powerful metaphor. Mm. Now, one of the things that struck me in this book was the sex.
No, really?
And by that, let me qualify. I think that in some memoirs of trans people, there is a sense of alienation from their own bodies and a real shutdown around sex and sexuality, or it's quite miserable or secretive or just shameful. I mean, there doesn't seem, you know, there, and for good reason. I mean, I understand all of that. But to me, you actually seem to enjoy yourself and your sex life, even pre-transition.
Yeah, and I learned to not be ashamed of that joy after my transition. I think prior to my transition, yes, I was ashamed of all that sexual joy, even though I enjoyed it. But early on in my transition, about a year after I transitioned from male to female, I snagged a job at the Dyke magazine, On Our Backs, and I got to work with Susie Bright, and I'm jaw-dropping, holy smoke, look what this woman is talking about. And then I got to see performance artists like Holly Hughes and Split Bridges, and these people were talking about their vaginas, and they were talking about getting fucked in the ass, and I'm going, whoa, dude, if you can do it, I can. Thank you, thank you, thank you. So I owe a lot to the early folks, and I owe a lot even more, get ready for this one, Tristan, to you, because you've paved the way. You've made it safe to talk about sex, safer than it certainly was even as recently as 5 or 6 years ago. More people like you are talking smartly. You're providing a forum for people to talk smartly about sex. And I think that's what's missing from queer activism, is that we don't talk enough about sex.
Right. And that's been going on for quite some time, is this idea that, you know, the mainstream queer movement or LGBT movement has been about trying to downplay our difference and our fucking and our radical sex stuff, and instead focus on, you know, that we all want Subarus and white picket fences and mortgages and kids, which some of us do, but some of us don't.
I want an iPad.
I thought you were getting the new iPad for yourself as a gift.
I did.
Oh, you did.
Okay. And I still want it. I'm learning how to use it, and it's really, really fun. So, good. Yeah, there's a certain degree of materialism. I think that comes with growing up white and middle class the way I did. And I'm trying to be generous with what privilege I have. And part of that generosity, I consider it a duty. If I've got a pulpit, if people are listening to me, then I just want to make sure that I'm saying, hey, sex is good. Sex is really, really good, and it's great to talk about, and it only gets better when you talk about it. So I feel privileged to be in that position, and I'm glad.
And I think you do it with such candor and humor. I mean, it really does sort of take the reader on the adventure with you. It really struck me. And also that you claim pretty early on that you enjoyed having sex with women. And that wasn't about you and your body. You were attracted to women. So sex with women was fun for you.
Oh, great fun. Always has been. I'm in touch with a lot of women I had sex with 40, 50 years ago.
You
really
are?
I am.
Where? On Facebook? What?
Oh, no. Face to face. There's a lady here in New York My dear friend Linda, we were lovers when I was in grad school at Brandeis in 1970, and she was a high school student in a program called Upward Bound, and we taught theater. I taught theater, and she was a student, and it was a summer project, and then the summer was over, and we got together, and she's an actress in town, and we're eccentric little old ladies around town.
Well, okay, let's hold that thought for a second because we have to take a break. But when we come back, we're going to talk more about Kate Bornstein's extraordinary love life and kinky sex life. More Sex Out Loud when we return.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in your brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Turn off the TV and pick up the remote control that is sure to please. Worn while making love, the WeVibe 3 features whisper quiet motors that will keep you anything but quiet. We can't help it if the rechargeable battery lasts longer than you do. Learn more about the world's number one vibrator for couples at WeVibe.com. WeVibe. Share the pleasure.
Tune in every week for the Ellis Martin Report. Our program will bring you the news and information that you need each week. We look at publicly traded small and mid-cap companies from a variety of sectors. We'll talk to key people in the industry to bring you the foreground and background of new and up-and-comers for potential investment. Please remember, invest only at your own risk. The Ellis Martin Report is meant for information purposes only. Tune in every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Voice America Business.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. My guest today is Kate Bornstein. First, I do want to have a shout out to my fabulous sponsor, The Smitten Kitten, a progressive sex toy store for everybody, which specializes in high quality sex toys and supplies. Check them out at smittenkittenonline.com and use the coupon code Tristan for 20% off. Okay, Kate, before the break, we were talking sex. And another.
Wait a minute. I'm going online to Smitten Kitten and going to use the coupon code.
Okay, great. Okay, all right. Can you multitask?
No, I'll talk with you now.
Okay. I love the Smitten Kitten. Okay.
Me too.
So we were talking about sex, and the other startling thing for me in this book is some of the really kinky stuff you talk about. And I'm wondering if you might read one of my favorite passages from the book, which is about a scene with these two people in Seattle who eventually you get into a relationship with. Will you grace us with that?
I'd be thrilled to. And I have to say, you know, it's my favorite sex scene in the whole book, and leave it to you to single it out. This is about the first time I did SM play with the two women who were about to own me. They prefer to remain anonymous, so I've called them Sailor and Lula. And you can Google that and find out where that comes from. It's from their favorite movie. All right, Sailor was the butch and Lula is the femme. Sailor was a cutter like me. She used an antique straight razor. Later, I learned that she sharpened it daily on a leather strop that hung by her sink. She could have ordered me to care for her razor. I would have kept it sharp, clean, and at the ready. But it was protocol in our world to ask before you touch anyone's toys, including us slaves, because we were toys too. The straight razor was Sailor's talisman, something that gave Sailor power and made her vulnerable at the same time. That first night, Sailor used her razor to cut two long, deep lines down the length of my back, from my shoulders to just above my butt. The next day, I'd look in the mirror and see the cello pattern. Sailor finished the second score at the base of my spine, and just as she lifted her blade, I began a long, deeply satisfying laugh. When I could catch my breath, I got a single word out. Wings. What's that, girl? Wings. My wings are breaking their way out of me. Watch out for the blood and feathers. We all laughed, but damn me to hell if I couldn't feel them. Lula was whispering into my ear, "This is going to help you remember those brand new wings of yours, girl." She rubbed two fists full of coarse sea salt into the long, bloody scores on my back, and I screamed. "Oh, shush, you big baby," Lula laughed. "The salt's good for you." I can feel my wings to this day. Long, strong, beautiful wings. Sailor had cut them free for me that night, and Lula made me remember them. Angel wings in bottom space. Oh, yes, it was a feeling of strength and freedom, and yes, that I can call up to this day. I know we played for hours and hours more. I remember they laid me across a table on my back. My bloody wings screamed in protest. No, it was me screaming. Still, an hour before dawn, the hour of the wolf, she called it, Sailor cut a wolf's skull into my chest. Wolves were her animal spirit guide. Sailor and Lula had freed my wings, they told me, so I could fly as high as I dared. Wolf, they said, would be there to protect me. I had never felt so safe, so secure, or so well cared for. The sun had been up for a few hours. Sailor was standing over me. The sun shone through the window. Her face, inches from my own, eclipsed the light. Sailor spoke softly from the shadow within a halo of sunlight. "What would you do for me, girl?" "Anything, ma'am. Anything for you." Okay. Never, never, never tell a sadist you'll do anything they want. Seriously. Especially not after they've been building up their bloodlust for the past 10 hours. Sailor carefully put her hands around my throat. Lula stood off to one side, watching us quietly. She knew what was coming. Sailor tightened her grip on my throat just enough so I would notice. "Well, this is what I really want to do, girl." "Do," was all I could say. "Please, ma'am, do." She slowly tightened her fingers until I wasn't breathing. Couldn't breathe. Red clouds, blood-red clouds, gathered at the edges of my vision. I could see Sailor's eyes fill with wonder. The world around me and inside me seemed to stop, and all I could think was, "At last, at long, long last." It was Lula who stopped us. She gently loosened Sailor's fingers from around my throat. I looked up at Sailor questioningly. She nodded. Only then did I take a long, slow, deep breath of air. Flash bulbs and fireworks, red, yellow, white, were going off at the edges of my lines of sight. Sailor sat back, grinning. When she saw that I was breathing again, Lula took my chin in her hand and slapped me hard across my face with her open palm. "You're my toy, girl, and I don't want you broken yet." Lula kissed me full and gently on the mouth. "Yet?" Sailor fastened a simple leather collar around my neck, loose but tight enough that I'd know all the time that I was wearing their collar. "You belong to us now, girl."
Okay, let's all take a deep breath. Okay.
I got to say all that on the radio?
I know. It's fantastic. Okay.
You are so fucking hot. Thank you.
Here's the thing. And you reading it is well, it's kind of amazing. It's different than me reading it in my head. It's really explicit. It's really raw. And it's also not the kink that people usually write about. When people say that they're kinky, they go to bondage and they go to role play, or they go to things that might seem a little, well, a little more accessible, a little more 50 Shades of Grey-esque. But you went right there to cutting, choking, and ownership. So let's just break this down for people who may be alarmed. I want to talk about what it meant to you to be a collared slave, what it meant to you for these two women to own you.
It wasn't unfamiliar to me, doing service. I had done that for 12 years in Scientology. All of us in the organization called the Sea Organization, which is part of Scientology to this day, it's their highest holy order, even though it wasn't holy when we were part of it. It was really sexy fun. But we were slaves. We might as well have been. We had no choice in or say in anything that we did. So being of service and having no say, really, in my life for a year was familiar. And within that space, the big difference was is the two women who owned me protected me fiercely. They stood up for me. They loved me. I loved them. And there was none of that love in Scientology. And I had the time. You know what I learned most out of being a slave? And this was right near the end of the time. I learned dignity. They asked me at one point to be of service to one of their friends. And not sexual service. I mean, bring her breakfast in bed. And they said, imagine being a butler in one of those old English movies or one of those new English television shows. Oh, yeah. And it just went off. I could take pride in my service. And I didn't have to be a whipped puppy all the time, which was how I'd led my life up till that point. Always going, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry I didn't get it right. I'm so sorry I didn't do enough for you. It was a year of chop wood, carry water. And I treasure it to this day. Sailor and Lula and I are our best friends. So deep.
Mm. It's interesting because I think there's still so much misinformation and misunderstanding about SM practices. Mm. And this idea that you articulated that you felt powerful and empowered as a slave, that really, you know, that echoes a lot of people's experiences, I think, but what the mainstream still doesn't understand. Because it sounds like you said for the first time in your life, you sort of took charge.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic. But we've got to get to the blood, the cutting. Tell me about this cutting. What, how it happens. Let's just educate people for a second about what cutting is and what it means to you.
All right. This is, I've been a cutter since my teens. I discovered it in high school. I went to an all boys Methodist prep school in New Jersey. And, I was really miserable there. And the only thing that brought me relief was cutting. And I cut on my thighs and I cut on my arms. This may trigger some of your listeners. But I'll be gentle, okay? I'll be gentle. The cutting works for me. It gave me relief enough to stay alive another day. And do I recommend it for people? Not really. It's not on the top of my list of places to go to make my life more worth living. But I've learned to incorporate it in my SM play with other people cutting on me. That's just great. That's just awesome fun. After I'm dead, I've told Barbara she can release some pictures of me bleeding. It's pretty cool.
Okay, well, we're going to wait for those pictures, but you're not dead yet. There could still be more to come. We are going to pause for a second from a word from our fantastic sponsors, including WeVibe, the world's best-selling couples vibrator. Go to we-vibe.com to find out all about it. Coming up, we're going to tackle the mental health issues Kate writes about in her memoir and those that queer and LGBT people face in general. So stay with us on Sex Out Loud.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Jennifer Pritchett from The Smitten Kitten. We're huge Tristan Taormino fans, just like you, and we're so proud to be the presenting sponsor for Sex Out Loud. If you're not already familiar with Smitten Kitten, here's the deal. We're an education-based sex toys and supplies retailer. We sell high-quality, non-toxic, and artist-made sex toys, organic lubes, and all kinds of kinky stuff, including hard-to-find vegan options. We cater to an incredibly diverse clientele and specialize in helping you find new sexual interests, expand your sexual skill sets, and even troubleshoot sexual issues with you. We are here to help you feel confident and sexy. We spend a ton of time and energy curating our selection of products to make sure we have the best selection, be it silicone dildos, pegging and strap-on equipment, vibrators, or ethically made porn. Our mission is to make sex-positive culture accessible to everyone. Don't miss our free streaming explicit educational videos, many of which were directed by Tristan herself, on our website, smittenkittenonline.com. Get inspired by Tristan's amazing show, Sex Out Loud, and then visit us online at our Minneapolis location.
Kids face very tough and very real issues every single day. It can be bad. It can be ugly. Now there's something good that can help. Tune in to The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly on the Voice America Kids channel. We'll discuss the issues and provide solutions and connections to solutions that you will be able to use. Our show goes right to the heart of today's kids and beyond. Your parents will probably want to listen in too. The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly airs Mondays at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 Eastern on Voice America Kids.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taormino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
News. Opinion.
Your voice counts. Call toll free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taormino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. I'm talking with my guest, gender theorist, gender outlaw, gender fucker, Kate Bornstein. I want to talk now about mental health. You know, we have some statistics now about LGBT people and mental health issues. And there are some surveys which show that on average, lesbian, gay, and bisexual adults are 1.5 times more likely to have depression, anxiety disorders, and substance abuse disorders than their heterosexual counterparts. And there has been some data from a non-random survey of self-identified trans people, which found that up to 1/3 of respondents report making one or more suicide attempts in their lifetime. And in U.S. surveys, lesbian, gay, bisexual adolescents and adults have a 2 to 6 times higher rate of reported suicide attempts compared with straight people. And I think it's clear why queer and trans people have more mental health issues than their straight counterparts. We have a stigma from society for being who we are, a lack of role models, bullying, rejection from family and community, widespread homophobia and discrimination. But I want to know from you, Kate, about your personal struggles that you talk about in this memoir. You reveal that you have been diagnosed with borderline personality disorder, And for listeners who may not know what that is, can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. If you remember the Winona Ryder character in Girl Interrupted, she was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder, and that book is excellent, helped me a lot. Borderline personality disorder used to be seen as, the borderline people were talking about was the border between neurosis and psychosis. We were seen as dangerous people. We were neurotic, but you'd never know when we would flip over into really psychotic behavior. Mommy Dearest is an example of a borderline personality. She was, that's what she was. Her archetype, there are several archetypes. The witch, that's what she was. My own archetype is more lovable. I'm the waif. And you go, oh, how cute. Because cute was my survival tactic all my life. And I could hide behind cute. But what borderline personality disorder, BPD, is seen as today is emotional dysregulation. That's spelled D-Y-S, dysregulation. We're not able to find the off button or the volume button for any of our emotions. We need to learn skills to control our emotions, to tolerate distress. We need to learn interpersonal skills, because as a borderline person with borderline personality disorder, we're inherently mistrustful, and one of our tactics is goodbye after we've hurt you. So it's not the safest kind of person to be around unless they're working on it. And thank goodness I'm working on it. I'm going through a course of therapy that I started about a year ago called Dialectic Behavioral Therapy. And it's Marshall Linehan, Dr. Marshall Linehan discovered it, came up with it, out of cognitive behavioral therapy, which is, these are your skills you need to do when you're feeling stressed. But she combined it with Zen Buddhism, which is, like, to me, my favorite spiritual path. It's the only slapstick spiritual path left in the world, and I love it. It's a kind of a, oh, well, and that made it fun enough to follow this path of dialectic behavioral therapy. What's a dialectic? It's an alternative to a binary. A binary is two and two only, black and white thinking, like gender, man and woman.
Yeah, this is a fascinating, I was just going to say, this is a fascinating idea that you're challenging another binary, a different binary.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one of the symptoms of people who have lived with borderline personality disorder is black and white thinking. And I think I shook a lot of that out of myself when I started to question gender. And it became a meta for me for the rest of my life. So I still have to practice being non-judgmental. And I still have urges to judge people. But now I can spot those urges and put them. The alternative to a binary is a space that includes more than one binary. For example, gender is thought of to be a binary of men and women. Well, there are more binaries inside the space of regulation called gender. There are men and women. There are boys and girls. There are butch and femme. That's just three binaries that exist in a dialectic, which is to say a third space. And that acceptance of gray is one fuck of a relief. It is. I mean, you know, it's like you read, when I was growing up, you'd read these sex books, these how to do it books, and you have to do it this way. And there was never room for, well, you know, have fun, give it a good try, which is why I'm thrilled to be partnered with Barbara Corrales, who, that's kind of how she does stuff.
Okay, we're going to get to Barbara, but I want to go back to this idea of the binary, because I think you really, you broke that whole thing open in Gender Outlaw. And I'm interested to hear your thoughts, because it was clear that back in the 80s, you felt like the only option for you was to become a woman. But I still feel like that binary, I know it's shifted, but it's also holding strong from where I stand, especially among people who are born female, who don't identify as female or woman. There seems to be a lot of pressure to transition to male. I mean, a common cry we hear from lesbians, where have all the butch women gone? They've transitioned. What are your thoughts on where the gender binary is and what it's like for people who don't want to be man or woman?
This whole postmodern gender theory, because when I wrote it, when I wrote Gender Outlaw, Tristan, it was a theory. It was a theory. I think this makes sense of my life. That was that book. Since then, folks of your generation and younger have taken that theory into awesome practice with the notion of genderqueer, with the discovery of gender expression, which I never talked about in my books. So it's come a long way in our underground world. Now, transgender is moving into a mainstream culture in the same way it began to move in the underground culture. Oh, okay, I see. You're not a woman. All right, so you're a man. Okay, I can get that. Yeah, all right. That's the first step in understanding some transgender, is that it's not immutable. You can change. That's the first step in understanding postmodern gender theory. To that, though, we have to add, and not only is it not changeable, and not only is it changeable, but you get to change it into anything you want to change it into. It doesn't have to be man or woman. It can be both or neither. You can throw age into the mix. You can throw race into the mix. You can throw class into the mix, consciously and playfully. And when you do that, gender loses its ability to humiliate you.
But do you think that there still is pressure among some people to transition?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I totally ignored that question, didn't I? I'm just so glad to hear myself talk.
No.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, there's of course, what I'm trying to say is that this notion of gender as a dialectic rather than a binary is part of a wave moving through the culture. And of course, there's going to be a crest of a wave. And those are the young generation, 20-somethings, who are calling themselves genderqueer, identifying and living as genderqueer and doing wonderful stuff with it. But still, there are people all around us and all around them who go, no, there are men and there are women. And that is true. There are men and there are women. That's a very true binary. There's no denying it. It's real. Misogyny is real. Women get murdered, raped, beaten, harassed for no other reason than the fact that they're women. No other reason. And so it's real. Paradoxically, it's completely false. And this is what postmodernism is. Postmodernism is the notion that things can have two, even contradictory meanings. And Pope Benedict has condemned postmodern gender theory because he thinks it's going to destroy the natural order of men and women. And he's right.
Ooh, that sounds good to me.
Right?
I mean, that sounds good to me. Really good.
I think so. Yeah, really good too. I mean, at least people are getting it that that's what we're doing. Does that mean that there will be no room for people who want to be men and people who want to be women? No.
There'll just be more options.
I'm guessing there will always be men and there will always be women, because those are lovely genders. I was never able to live up to either of them.
Well, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more with Kate Bornstein about gender and the future. But first, there's something that someone of any gender can use, and that is one of our sponsors, Astroglide.
Oh, God, yes.
Astroglide personal lubricants make sex better. You can get a free sample when you visit astroglide.com. Stay with us. More to come.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Jennifer Pritchett from The Smitten Kitten. We're huge Tristan Taramino fans just like you, and we're so proud to be the presenting sponsor for Sex Out Loud. If you're not already familiar with Smitten Kitten, here's the deal. We're an education-based sex toys and supplies retailer. We sell high-quality, non-toxic, and artist-made sex toys, organic lubes, and all kinds of kinky stuff, including hard-to-find vegan options. We cater to an incredibly diverse clientele and specialize in helping you find new sexual interests, expand your sexual skill sets, and even troubleshoot sexual issues with you. We are here to help you feel confident and sexy. We spend a ton of time and energy curating our selection of products to make sure we have the best selection, be it silicone dildos, pegging and strap-on equipment, vibrators, or ethically made porn. Our mission is to make sex-positive culture accessible to everyone. Don't miss our free streaming explicit educational videos, many of which were directed by Tristan herself, on our website, smittenkittenonline.com. Get inspired by Tristan's amazing show, Sex Out Loud, and then visit us online at our Minneapolis location.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
We're back at Sex Out Loud talking to our guests today, Kate Bornstein. Now, we were talking a lot about gender right before the break, and so the question popped in my head, which perhaps other people have asked you before, but I'm going to ask you, and that is, how do you identify your gender today? That's the first part, and I'll give you the second part.
I call myself trans. I didn't invent the term. I picked it up. I borrowed it. In fact, I borrowed it from Mix Justin Vivian Bond, who calls V-self trans. And or a tranny. I call myself a tranny, which is problematic because it's a very sex-positive use of the word, and because it's one of the very few slang words for trans people, it gets hurled at us as a hateful epithet. But I've always called myself a tranny before it was a hateful epithet, and that's what I am.
And if you were where you were pre-transition right now in 2012, would you again transition or would you adopt a genderqueer identity?
Wow. I really liked my cock. All right. It was a fun thing to have. They feel really good, Tristan. I'm sorry you won't get the chance to like have someone squeeze your cock. That's a great feeling. Given that, having a vagina such as mine is funner for me. So I'm glad to have had both the chances. And if I knew what I know, if I knew how much funner it would be, I'd still go through with it. I tried drag queen, and I just wasn't pretty enough. I wasn't brave enough. I think they are the prettiest, bravest people in our community as our drag kings, the handsomest, bravest people.
I agree. My femme role models growing up, and I'm talking at 14, 15, 16, were all drag queens. I spent the summers in Provincetown and got to meet some of the most beautiful and talented drag queens that I've ever known. So I'm with you on that page.
Well, they would be proud of you.
Oh.
As their drag daughter, because I've seen you and you are fabulously femme.
So I want to ask what may be a sensitive question, but it seems like you have aged quite gracefully.
Sorry.
And so I want to talk a little bit about aging as a trans person and feeling sexy, because at least what you exude is still a kind of sexiness that we often don't see represented in the media at, you know, as someone over 60. So do you still feel sexy, and how does it feel to be sexy but older?
Sexy is what I've always wanted to feel. I've always wanted to feel like a sexy girl. I never thought it was possible. And it only really became possible for me, maybe only really started to believe it 15 years ago, maybe, and during that period of my slavery. People would call me, you know, sexy or beautiful. And when you're a slave, you can't say no. You have to say thank you, ma'am. And so I got into practice of saying thank you. There's an interesting thing with trans people, and I believe this happens with people who make any major life transition. I am, by all reasonable, legal, medical facts, a 64-year-old man. This is it, right? And I went through my gender reassignment surgery 26 years ago. So what does that make me? I'm a 26-year-old young woman. And so I have that vitality that I draw on, because the world is still so new to me in that way. And in terms of old age, there are times I feel really, really, really old. And there's one way of looking at old age, which is called generatively. And this is where you go, okay, I've lived a full life. What can I do to give back? What can I do to make it easier for some other folks? And that's the path I've chosen. And if that keeps me young and sexy in your eyes, bam, I'm a winner.
And so I love that. I love that about you. And this brings me around to your current girlfriend, because I noticed that your memoir ends before you even meet her, I think, or maybe you're coming to New York and your memoir ends. And so there's nothing about your current girlfriend in the memoir. So I want to hear about her, and I want to hear about your pretty long-term relationship.
Well, it's been 15 years. I've been longer with Miss Barbara Corrales than I spent in Scientology. And so she is such an amalgam of smart and sexy and compassionate and fierce. She's a mystery every day to me still. And so I wasn't ready to write about her. I did write in the memoir that she is Romy to my Michelle, and that's where we bonded. We bonded on being blonde and cute together, girly girl girlfriends, and we added sex to it. Holly Hughes, my mentor, my performance artist mentor, says femme on femme, that's perverted.
Wow. Okay. And so I wonder how she has affected your own sense of yourself, because she too is a sex and relationship coach. She is the creator of Urban Tantra. So she's a very well-known Tantra person. And I know that she's written about the fact that she wasn't kinky before she met you. So I'm wondering how your interactions and how your relationship has shifted each other's sexuality.
I've come to experience... All right, Barbara's sexuality, and she describes this really more, even in more detail in her new book, Ecstasy is Necessary. Her sexuality isn't homo or hetero or bi or even kinky. Her sexuality is, she has sex to achieve a union with the goddess. She wants to splatter all over the universe with her orgasms. Or she wants to aim them so that they do good for people. And this blows me away. And we do that with pain. We do that with pleasure. We both of us are inordinately fond of public sex. And so we have a great time playing in play spaces together. We edit each other's books. And I don't think there's any more intimate relationship that a couple could have, because I am so nervous and scared about my words. She's the first person that reads them and goes, you know, Kate, no, these three pages here, no. And she lets me do that for her. And so I've never been tighter with someone or more in love.
Queer love. I love queer love.
It's queer geeky love.
Now, I know you're on tour with your memoir and you're headed to LA next, but are there some new projects in the pipeline that you can let us in on?
Yes, indeedy.
Oh, good.
Filmmaker Sam Fader is making a documentary about me called Kate Bornstein is a Queer and Pleasant Danger. And he's been following me and accompanying me for 2 years now, and the project should be done in another half year. I think there's a Kickstarter campaign underway and almost finished right now. I am working on Routledge Press. Taylor and Francis has asked me to update a book I wrote and released 15 years ago, My Gender Workbook, and it's called My New Gender Workbook, and I think it's my legacy piece for postmodern gender theory. And well, it is. It'll probably be the last thing I write about it. And I'm real proud of that. And that'll be out in November. But the piece I'm looking most forward to is writing a young adult novel following in the footsteps of Christopher Isherwood and Truman Capote. The characters that I'm following are Sally Bowles in Cabaret, Holly Golightly in Breakfast at Tiffany, and my character is going to be a young, fun, fierce, tranny working girl in New York City. And it'll be a young adult novel. It'll be, I think, 12-year-olds will be able to read it and enjoy it, as will 72-year-olds.
Okay, well, we look forward to that. Thank you, Kate, for being on Sex Out Loud, for sharing your life in this memoir and in this interview. I really appreciate it, and I know it's going to speak to a lot of people.
Thank you, and congratulations again on this radio show. May you be on the airwaves for a long fucking time.
Kate Bornstein's latest book is A Queer and Pleasant Danger, a memoir published by Beacon Press and available at bookstores everywhere. You can follow her on Twitter at Kate Bornstein, all one word, and that's the best way to contact her if you want to bring her to your college, your university, your conference for a talk, a workshop, or a performance. She's headlining the Trans Unity Pride Week at the LA LGBT Center on June 16th and 17th. Tune in next week when my guest will be feminist spitfire Jacqueline Friedman, author of the book, What You Really, Really Want, The Smart Girl's Shame-Free Guide to Sex and Safety. Until then, I encourage you to keep the discussion going on Facebook.com/AskTristan, on Twitter at SexOutLoudRadio, and in your own life. Take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety. Sex Out Loud is brought to you by The Smitten Kitten, non-toxic quality sex toys and supplies. Visit smittenkittenonline.com.